There's an amazing thing happened in America. There's a move of God started in a place called Mobile, Alabama. I have no idea where that is. I think it's in the south, roughly. There's a man, you may know of a guy called John Kilpatrick, who was the leader of the church at Brownsville, Pensacola, when they had a revival there of holiness a few years ago. And he moved to Mobile to start a church, and it's called the Bay of the Holy Spirit, also known as the Church of His Presence. And he started with a group of people. They meet in a civic center. They don't have their own facilities. And they've just formed a group of people who are hungry for Jesus. And they have an English evangelist visiting called Norman Moss, Morris from Sheffield. He's just a young English bloke. And about 2 weeks ago, the glory of God just came upon that whole gathering. And they went from a group just a little bigger than this to thousands of people. There are people saved, dozens of people saved in every meeting. There are awesome miracles of healing taking place, not only there, but in the lives of people who are just watching it on the internet. And it just is amazing what God is doing. And John Kilpatrick there's an interview with him, and he has one thing only, and that is that Jesus will be glorified and that the Holy Spirit will have absolute freedom to do what he wants to do, and he is. And there's a wonderful portion I watched the other night of a woman called, her surname is Knox, Mrs. Knox, and 22 years ago on Christmas Day she had a motor car accident and she severed her spinal cord. So she was paralyzed from the waist down for 22 years. And she married her husband 9 years ago, and he only knew her as a cripple in a wheelchair. And she was in the meeting, and they actually put the camera on her, and you can see her sort of fiddling with her legs. And she suddenly starts to say, "I can feel my legs. I can feel my legs." Now, for those of you who know, if your spinal cord is severed, there is no way that you can feel your legs. And so these guys are onto her, and they're praying and they're proclaiming. And she's sitting there and she's swaying backwards and forwards in her wheelchair. And suddenly she, whoa, and she comes up onto her feet. And she falls back in the wheelchair again. And she carries on and she's doing this motion. And then suddenly, whoa, out she comes again. And she stays on her feet. And they take her, one on each side of her, husband on one arm and this John Kilpatrick on the other arm. And she starts to walk with great difficulty. She's sort of doing this. But I mean, if you know that you have no spinal cord, you can't even do that. And she starts to walk around this room, and it takes a long time. And eventually, they let her go completely, and she walks on her own. And it's just awesome to see what God is doing. You know, it's amazing. And when you see that, then you think, how can we doubt? How can we doubt anything? How can we not believe Jesus for what he wants to do, what he can do in any person's life, in any situation? Jesus always said, only believe. All things are possible for those who believe. Only believe. You don't have to do anything else. Just got to believe him. You know, it's like saying, not only do I love you, I believe you also, Jesus. So I'm excited. Any trouble with this thing is that they don't archive their meetings, so you've got to get up at 1 o'clock in the morning to watch it, because it's live streamed. So it's on. If you ever want to go to thechurchofhispresence.org or just Google that, you'll come to their church and you click on Bay Revival and you'll go straight in and can watch the thing at 1 o'clock in the morning. Highly recommended. Will change your life and probably heal you as well if you want it. That's absolutely wonderful. But it just is amazing, because what you can see are people coming in to this place from all over the world. They say people are flying in from South America. People are coming in from Europe, from England. People are just getting on the first plane and going over there. And what does that tell you? There's a hunger in people for the reality of God. People want to encounter the presence of Jesus. And why do you think that is? I believe it's because when God created us, He created us with that whole dynamic, that whole potential. We need to encounter Him. Because if you look what He did with the first Adam and Eve in Genesis chapter 2 or 3, He used to come in the garden and walk with them. And it gives you some understanding that God intended that you and I would come into His presence, would know Him and be able to walk in His presence and be able to understand what He's saying and hear His voice and gaze into His glory and see His splendor. It was what God intended right in the beginning. It's what He made us for. And then a whole lot of things went wrong. But then when Jesus came, it was to reestablish what we were created for. And that's why you'll find the guys flying over there in droves at the moment are Christians who want to encounter what they've been created to encounter, the presence of God. And all they're doing there is they're just, they're really doing no great preaching. They just simply worship God at great length. And then God begins to meet the people. And then the evangelist guy calls up the salvation guys and they all come streaming up to get saved. And those are the local people, obviously, who know there's something going on. And it's interesting that so when you look at some of the people who are getting saved, they're sort of, wow, you know, like the rough end of the world is there getting saved. And I really believe that they're probably the ones who are more aware of their need than anybody else. They're the guys who know they've got a need, and they're the guys who are going to turn up and say, I need help. And they're coming and they're getting set free by Jesus. And I think this is so exciting, and it's so what we are here for. We want to know His presence. We created for it. I guess at some point, the Lord said to me this morning when I was preparing this, that entering His presence is a choice that each one of us must make. You see, you're created for the with the capacity to know His presence. But the decision, whether you're going to have it or not, each one of us must make that decision for ourselves. I can either say, no, it's too costly, or no, nothing much going on here. Or, well, if Benny Hinn was here, I might. Or Bill Johnson, but not for anybody else am I going to do this. The point is that God has put that door open in front of us. And all it takes from each of us is a decision. You know, what I loved about that woman, that Mrs. Knox who got healed, although she fell back in that wheelchair, she didn't say, well, I gave my best shot. She fought her way out of that wheelchair. And you could see the intense struggle on her face as she was trying to get around that room. But she was going to take hold of what Jesus had shown her she could have. And nothing was going to put her back in the wheelchair. She had come out of the wheelchair, and she was determined to stay out of it. And it's that same thing with us coming into the presence of God. It's the same mindset. That is my place, and nobody is going to cheat me out of my place. No enemy is going to stop me from getting hold of what is mine, because Jesus won it for me, and I'm not giving it up for any enemy. And it's that same tenacity, that same absolute desire to take hold of what belongs to us. I'll tell you one other reason why we don't enter the presence of God or live a little way from it. And that's we have an enemy who knows that if we enter into the presence and we live close to Him, A, we're out of His range. Psalm 91 says, living under the shadow of your wing, we will have security. So He wants to keep us away from that place so that He can keep on having access to us. The second thing is He knows how powerful we get when we're filled with the presence of God. And so He goes to great lengths. You know, the interesting thing, think about it. If you were in a kind of guerrilla war situation and you wanted to infiltrate your enemy's camp, the best way you would do it if you didn't have great armor at your disposal is you would convince your enemy that you're invisible, or you try to be as invisible as you can. And I believe our enemy does the same thing. He convinces us that he doesn't exist. And so we feel pretty cool about it. We don't have to really try because he's not really there, and You know, I made a commitment to Jesus 20 years ago, and I'm pretty well okay. And the enemy is taking pot shots at us and stopping us from entering our rightful place, which God gave. What did Satan try and do through, or succeed in doing when he came to tempt Eve in the garden and Adam? It was to sever the close relationship, because he knows the ultimate destiny of man is to rule with Jesus. And so he has got to stop that if he's to succeed in his plan. And so every time you feel, well, I'm a bit tired, or the music's really not working this morning, or Benny Hinn's not here, stop and wonder why you're thinking that. Stop and wonder whether there's something in you that you could get past and you could release something from yourself to bring about victory. Gosh, those kids are really not happy with what I've just said. You know, if this wasn't true, why would Jesus have said, when he taught us, the disciples, to pray in Matthew 6, lead us not into temptation. You've got to pray it every day. Deliver us from evil. He wouldn't have asked you to pray that stuff if he didn't think it was kind of relevant, that somewhere along the line we might just need to do that. But yeah, I guess he's God, so he figured that one, and he said, you got to do this. I've thought a lot about revivals. I love studying, reading. I focus on them. And everybody, don't get frightened. We're not going to go back into all-night prayer meetings and not evangelize. We'll do both. But revivals happen not because people want revival, but because people get hungry for God. If you want revival, you won't see it. If you're hungry for God, you might see it. It's having an absolute desire for Him, having a hunger that only He can satisfy, having a longing in my heart that I've got to get hold of Jesus, or my life's not going to work. I've got to live in His presence. You know, I remember when I was first saved, I used to drink quite heavily before I got saved. And the first thing I didn't want to do is drink alcohol anymore when I got saved, for one simple reason. I didn't want anything to take away my sense, my ability to sense His presence, because I found that right in the beginning. And I thought, this is so brilliant. I don't ever want anything to stop this, because this is the best part of knowing God, is I can know His presence. And so in the same way, we need to look at what is it that's stopping me from getting into this place of knowing God. Something which most revivals have learned, if you look in the history books and you read about them, they've learned not only how to hunger after God, but two, how to steward God's presence. Do you know what I mean by that word? How to honor and take care of God's presence so that it remains at all time. And it's what those two things is what they've learned. They've learned this whole key is to understand how to take care of God's presence at all the time. You know, there's a good example when you look at the Ark of the Covenant, which was basically an acacia box. I don't know how big it was. And in it was overlaid with gold, acacia wood overlaid with gold. And in it, they kept the tablets of stone on which God had written the Ten Commandments for Moses, and Aaron's walking stick, which grew a bud on it. And they kept that there. But God said, I will put my presence on that ark. Wherever that ark is, my presence will be. And so these guys, they honored this ark. They knew how to honor it. It had to be carried in a specific way. It couldn't be touched by any man. It had to be carried by poles which were passed through rings on the side of it. And men carried it from a distance, but they were not allowed to come up to it. In fact, when the ark was brought back off, the Philistines had captured it. And as a man steadied it because it was falling off, he touched it and he dropped dead. Because there is an important thing about learning to honor or steward the presence of God actively and effectively. And that's what these guys in these revivals have learned. It's interesting when Israel didn't learn it. Like, for example, when Joshua, in Joshua chapter 6, we read that Israel marched against Jericho. And what they did is they carried the ark in front of them as God had directed them to do. So they had the trumpet players in the front, the ark went in front, and they marched around Jericho behind the ark, which represented the presence of God. And on the seventh day, on the seventh time round, the walls of Jericho came down, and God gave them spectacular, miraculous victories all the time. But that wasn't always so. Because there was a time, if you read in 1 Samuel chapter 4, when they kind of get the thing wrong, and they're no longer walking with God, so they don't have that same sensitivity to God any longer. And now instead of walking in the presence of God, they say, let's go and fetch the ark, because the battle's not going well. Let us bring up the ark of the Lord's covenant from Shiloh, so that it may go well with us and save us from the hand of our enemy. Can you see the difference from walking with the ark in front of you and the trumpeters proclaiming the presence of God, and the people come behind and they're saying, let's have the ark with us, because when it's with us, it goes well for us. And in a sense, what they've done is they turned the ark of the presence of God into a good luck charm. And you know, there's a danger in our lives that our relationship with God can be a bit like a good luck charm. You know, I made a commitment 20 years ago, 5 years ago, 2 years ago, 15 months ago, and that's ticked the box. The good luck charm. I get all the blessing now, but I don't, but I should. And so God is challenging us this morning, I believe, and saying, my presence has to be more than just a commitment you once made. My presence has to be something that you need to learn to live in and live with. It needs to be part of your life. It needs to be the part that's always consciously in your life and with you if you're going to see what I have purposed. But if we treat God like a good luck charm, we tend to get nothing much out of it. He is gracious and He still blesses and helps us. Have a look with me, please, at James chapter 4. I think we start at verse 5. Or do you think Scripture says without reason that the Spirit He caused to live in us envies intensely? What's it mean by that? It means that the Spirit of God inside me is jealous for me. He wants me more than anything else. He wants me to be in full-on relationship with Him. He wants me to be overflowing with the revelation of who He is all the time. So that's the first thing He wants to do, is He's jealous. He envies jealously for me. And then He says there, and then the next thing, of course, there was, but in verse 6, but He gives us more grace. That is why the Scripture says God opposes the proud, but He gives grace to the humble. And then go, submit yourself to the God and resist the devil. You know, so many of us, time we resist you, Satan, we protect, resist you. But the whole truth is you've got to submit yourself to God before you can resist Him. Because roughly it's like works like this. The devil is a rebel and he doesn't have to take orders from another rebel. Sorry, a bit harsh. But it's true, because he doesn't have to listen to somebody who's not submitted to God. Then it says, come near to God and He will come near to you. Wash your hands, you sinners, you, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Drop down a little bit there to verse 10. Humble yourselves before the Lord and He will lift you up. There's an interesting dynamic here. God says, if you humble yourself, I will lift you up. If you lift yourself up, I will have to do your job for you. Oh. You know, it's really interesting. In the Welsh Revival, they wouldn't even have their photographs taken and put in the newspaper. They didn't take any ads in any newspapers. They didn't try to promote what they were doing. Yet the Lord put them on the front page of most major newspapers all over the world. You see, there's what we can do, and then there's what God does. And it's humbling yourself isn't kind of sucking on a lemon, wearing sandals and a bun and looking miserable and having a dowdy look about you. That's not humbling yourself. I've come to understand humbling in a very different way. Humbling myself is recognizing my absolute need of God. I can't live without Him, not for 1 minute. I can't live without a knowledge of His presence. His presence is the most precious thing I know. I can't go anywhere without God being there. I have to rely on Him because life would be pretty miserable without Him. But when I'm close to Him, it all starts to work. And God wants to be in that place in our lives. He says, if you humble yourself, if you will pray, if you will get in the relationship with me, where you speak to me every day, I'll lift you up. I'll give you prominence. But if you want prominence, I'm not going to be able to do that. God will not be used for our end. And so God is saying to us this morning how important He sees it. That when I have a relationship with Him, it's got to be my primary relationship. It's got to be better than my relationship with my wife. It has to be my primary relationship, my most important relationship. It's got to fill my whole life. Every moment of my life has got to be absolutely taken with this relationship. So then when I come in to worship Him in a meeting, remember I said at the beginning, worship's for Him, the preaching's for you. But the worship belongs to Him, doesn't belong to anybody else. Doesn't belong to the musicians, doesn't belong to, it belongs to Him. So my decision about what I give to Him is pretty important here. I can say, well, you know, I'm a bit tired, I had a late night, so I'm not going to give you as much as I ordinarily would. No, I think you've had enough, you've had 5 minutes, and I'm going to sit down now, I'm out of this. Or I don't like the song, or they don't do any songs I know, so I'm not going to do this. But worship is decision. I actually have to decide to worship Him. Because it's unnatural to do it, because you can't see Him. But when you focus on Him and you start to give yourself to Him, He begins to reveal Himself to us. And it's absolutely wonderful. You know, every Sunday I stand here and I say to the Lord, shall we have preaching this morning? We're going to have preaching today. Please tell me, because I don't know. I'm not going to do it. If you say no, we're not going to do preaching. And it goes on and on like this until eventually the Lord says, no, preach. We are preaching now. But I'm so open. If the Lord says, no preaching now, we're not going to preach. We'll just worship. We'll just get totally wrapped up with God and leave it there. And it'll be absolutely brilliant because what He will do in your life will be better than I could ever do in your life. What God will sow into your life will be absolutely amazing. Do you know that there are things waiting for you and me to discover? There are realms of glory that He wants to show you. He wants to take you out of where you are. And He wants to put you in this most incredible place called His presence. He wants to show you things which you can't believe you will see on the earth. You can have it. It's waiting for you right now. Heaven is open where you are. There's an opportunity for you to go right in, but you need to decide if you want this or you don't want this. You know, I had a meal with Jacek the other night, and we had a really good chat. And the Lord had shown him something. I think he'd either read it or heard it, but it was a phenomenal bit of revelation. Because he understood that when a sacrifice is placed on the altar, God sends fire on sacrifice. But if sacrifice is withdrawn, there's nothing for fire to fall on. And so we keep saying, but where's the fire? And He says, well, where's the sacrifice? You see, if we put our life on the altar and we say, Jesus, You boss now, this belongs to You. And then we change our mind a little, and it's not that convenient right now, so I'll just take this back for a while, but you can have it back again maybe later on. And you say, where's the fire? Where's the power of God? You know, we had a great example, Dot and I, and a heck of a lesson to learn. Years back in South Africa, the Lord asked us to give a house to the church's building fund, and so we did that. And we then stayed in a rented property, and there was a guy who also owned a property, who lived in one of the houses, had this brilliant caravan, and I always wanted a caravan. And so he said, look, he told me the price for this caravan, I just didn't have that money. Then I suddenly thought, but hang on, the church doesn't need the money now, the builders haven't even started yet. So maybe I could borrow some of that money back. And I could buy the caravan, and then I'll pay them back again. And I went to the leader, and I said, this is what I believe I would like to do. How do you feel about it? And he kind of didn't look thrilled to bits, but he said, yeah, that'll be all right. You go ahead and do that. So I got a quantity of money back. I went and bought the caravan, and we parked it outside our house, and it was fantastic. And Dot said, the curtains are dirty. I need to wash them. So she washed the curtains, and they immediately disintegrated, so we had to make new curtains. Then we said, let's go visit my mum down the coast. We'll take the caravan with its new curtains. Oh, are we going to stay in our own caravan? And we loaded it up with the children and Dot and I, and we went down the coast, and we parked it in this caravan park on the beach, and it was beautiful and looked absolutely spectacular. And we went to see my mother for dinner. When we got back that night, people had broken into the caravan. They'd taken knives and slashed the tent. They'd broken all the windows. They'd gone in and they'd stolen everything. There was nothing left in the caravan. Dot's jewelry, the kids' clothes, everything was gone. We owned nothing. Like shock, you know, can't believe this has happened. I should be blessed. I mean, I'm the one who gave the house away. And we got the caravan repaired and we had to pay for that. And then we got it back and we just hit 1 month after another. It was unbelievable. The car's tires went in 1 month. The brakes went in another month. One thing after another. And we just didn't have the money to pay for it. So I was putting it on my card. Eventually, I was getting into debt. And I knew I couldn't be in debt. And I went to the leader and his wife. And I said, look, I'm terribly sorry. I have to confess that I'm in debt. And I want to tell you this. I want to be open with you. And they kind of said, sit down. We have to talk to you. And he said, when you came to ask to borrow that money, we thought, how can we possibly refuse him? He's given us everything he has. How can we begrudge him a little bit like that? And so against my better judgment, I said, okay, you can have the money. He said, but I knew the moment you walked out the house, it was a wrong decision. He says, I believe you've taken back what you sacrificed to God, and you're experiencing an absence of blessing in your life. And he said, there's only one thing I know you can do. You need to sell that caravan, and you need to pay that money back as quickly as possible. Well, as it happened, the only buyer I could find for the caravan paid me just over half what I paid for it. So they had to pay off a whole bunch of debt as well. And it was a costly lesson. And for probably a year, it took us to get out of debt and clear that whole thing away. And so you had a whole year to remember why you were paying off this debt and why you had no money for anything else. But you see what had happened? I'd withdrawn the sacrifice. The blessing was there. I took away the sacrifice, and then there was a consequence to my decision to do that. And the leaders apologized to me for agreeing to it and all that. Everybody was proper about it. But nonetheless, I had the consequence because I made the choice. And I think sometimes with our lives, we kind of give them to Jesus, and we make promises, and we say, you know, there's a special meeting and a special speaker, and something happens in your heart, and you say, yes, Lord, you can have my life. You can have everything. I want it. And then the time comes when you're not that moved to possibly make that decision. And you feel, well, maybe I didn't really want to decide that now. Maybe I just don't feel that good about that decision right now. I want to live for myself for a minute. I've got a life too, you know. And the absence of fire is just so discouraging and so disheartening in our lives. And I believe it's the reason why so many of us end up becoming discouraged, because there's no hope left. But God hasn't let us down from his side. You see, he plays it by the rules every time. He says, if you come close to me, I'll come close to you. He says, if you humble yourself, I'll lift you up. And I've had to learn this principle to my cost over the years, that he's not out to beat me up, but he doesn't bless. He doesn't send fire on where the sacrifice is removed. He's good, he's wonderful, he's loving, he's kind. And so I've had to learn that, and I've had to learn these incredibly important lessons that I now need to keep short accounts with the one who I've made a covenant with to follow and to obey. If I want to see his presence in my life, if I want to know the goodness of God, I have to do this. I have to keep short accounts. I have to keep myself in a place where I haven't the luxury of becoming offended at somebody to the point where I don't want to look at them, don't want to spend time with them. I haven't that in my life now. Do you know, one of the things the Lord showed us when we lived in South Africa, when the apartheid system was still on there, was that it was an evil, demonic thing. It wasn't a political problem. It was a demon, a big, ugly demon. Anything that causes us to look on another man or woman and not see them as God sees them. Do you know that when Jesus looks at me and at you, he sees you through the blood of his son, and he sees you as you're going to be in the end. He doesn't see you as the failure. He doesn't see you as the one that missed it. He doesn't see you as the one that let him down. He sees you through the blood, and it's the blood that sets you free. And as Father sees us, we must see each other. Therefore, I don't see people's color. I don't see people's sex, whether they're male or female. I see them as a completed work in Jesus. You know, it's really challenging when you're in a multicultural congregation like we are. You can so easily say, well, I've never really made friends with people from that particular nationality, so I don't know if I really want to, if I really will or really will be able to. But the challenge that God puts to us today is, how do we choose to see each other? Do I choose to see each person in this church as something absolutely special? Because that's how God sees you. Isn't that amazing? So when apartheid ended in South Africa, it was a demon that fell, because it was demonically inspired. Anything that judges another person on the basis of anything other than love is not from Jesus. And so we can worship God. We have a choice, and you have a right. You have every right to enter into the fullness. There's nothing stopping you. Jesus has removed every hindrance. All that's left for you and I to do is decide, I want to do this. I'm going to do this. You see, I believe that we're building to a move of God in this church. I truly believe it. When we left Kingdom of Faith Horsham, Pastor Colin, 3 weeks before we left Horsham to come here, he prophesied on a Sunday. He said, the Lord showed me that the church in London will exceed 10,000 people in number. Now, that's amazing. But the Lord said to us, it's not about you standing on a platform before 10,000 people. It's about you touching people's lives and allowing them to touch your life as Jesus allowed people to do. It's about people living together in the harmony of the kingdom. And then we came to London, and we started our first meeting. We said to Luke, can you play the guitar? And he said, yeah, I can play about 1.5 songs. We said, great, you're the worship leader. And poor Luke and Joe had to get up the next Friday. We used to meet on Friday. And they got his guitar, and he did his 1.5 songs, and then we did the rest without guitars. And you know, we did that, and it was all right. It grew. But can I tell you something honestly? I don't believe that we're going to succeed because we've got great musicians up here with all the bells and whistles. I don't believe that we'll succeed because we've got the most erudite, greatest preacher that ever drew breath here. I believe the only thing that will make us succeed is total, humble, dependent hearts on Jesus. Jesus, I depend on you and you only. Now, that's for me and my situation, but for each one of us in our situation, whatever it is you need to see God do, whatever you need to see change in your circumstances, Jesus says all things are possible to those who love God. So love God. Doesn't matter what the challenges you're facing, all things are possible. This morning, everything in your life is possible. If you have pulled the sacrifice, even just a little like we did, you can fix that very quickly. Firstly, just saying sorry is a good way to fix it. Put it back. Say, Jesus, this life is yours. I'm not taking it away from you again. It belongs to you now. Whatever you do, that's fine with me. However you want me to live this life, I will live it. But I'm not going to pull the sacrifice on you because your presence is more precious than anything else. I don't want to do anything to disrupt that. It makes worship different. Hang on, this is my right. And I'm not going to let any enemy steal my right from me. This was won on a cross at Calvary. This right to worship God, to enter and know the presence of God. It was won for me. And I'm not going to have it stolen away from me by anything. Either something I did or something an enemy did, but I'm not going to let that happen. Worship is mine. And nothing else matters. You know, we're all different, and people worship in different ways, and some people are noisier than others, and that's fine. Some people do things that you wouldn't do. Some people clap when you would rather sing. Some people sing when you like to clap or whatever. Actually doesn't matter. Because in the atmosphere of love and tolerance of other people, doesn't matter what they do. So if Sister Teresa starts to weep as she does, I love it when she cries because I know the Spirit's moving in the meeting. I just love it because I know something's happening and I know she won't fake it because when the Spirit's not moving, she doesn't cry. Some of you may have worship that requires you to stand still. I love what Belinda's doing at the moment. Do you mind if I tell you? Belinda's dancing. She's amazing. She's down to the back there. And I just love, I look up and I say, oh, wow, that's beautiful. She's being moved by the Spirit. That's so special. I love what different people do as they're encountering the Spirit. I love it when Siobhan suddenly starts to shout on the top of her voice and there's someone in the room. And you know what? It kicks something off in other people's lives as well because suddenly this ripple flows across the meeting and people start to say, wow, I love what's going on here. I want to be part of it. Guys, you were created for something so awesome. You were. There's nothing ordinary about your life anymore. You are the most extraordinary people. And you have a right to be extraordinary. You have a right to know the presence of Jesus. You have the right to stand in the presence of the glory, to see mighty angels standing around you. You have every right to know that. You know, talking about that, John Kilpatrick, in one of his testimonies, he said that when he was 15, 17 men met together to pray. There was a problem in the church. And they met at midnight to pray in the church where he grew up. And he said they were praying, and about 3 in the morning, a sudden huge wind hit the main doors of the church, and the doors swung open. And he says it was with such force that it actually cracked against the wall, on the handles on the walls. And they looked round, and all 17 saw 2 massive angels. And he said they didn't have wings, and they were not wearing dresses either. They were dressed like normally, huge, rugged guys. And they marched in the back, and they got to the front, and one turned right and one turned left. And they went and they positioned themselves, one against the wall, each side, and they stood there for the duration of the prayer meeting. And in the early hours of the morning when the meeting was due to end, they never spoke to them at all. When time was to come to, they just suddenly, at a signal, they both walked, marched to the center, and they marched right out of the meeting again and left the hall. People, this is possible for all of us. You can see and know this glorious presence that God has. There are angels here now. Some of you are more aware of them than others, and maybe we'll all grow in our awareness of angels. But there are angels standing in this room with us at the moment. And Jesus wants you to live in that place. That's yours. That's your inheritance. And no enemy is allowed to steal that away from you. God has won it. It's yours. Do you want it? You can have it. Let's worship Jesus.